cat still got your tongue, Zemtex?
Lobo gave the bike console a backhand slap, as if Zemtex's brain was likely to feel it. The bounty hunter's ebullient mood at the prospect of a million credits had been tarnished just a tad by the realization that his quarry was on Earth. He hated that place. All those puny, pathetic human beings. Man, the very thought made him want to barf. But that wasn't the worst of it. The worst of it was all the lantern-jawed, spandex-wearing, goody-goody super creeps. They were beyond barfing at. The mere knowledge of their existence made Lobo want to maim and mutilate, and maybe torture a few of them, too.
Hey, I got me an idea. This'll blow your silent cover dung brain. Let me see. Put the blue wire here. Switch green and red. And let's go live to Spazfrag Semi-Sentient Control.
A jagged flash like a miniature lightning streak pinged across the bike's monitor screen.
Hey there, Semi. So you was just playing possum after all. Now that ain't very sociable, is it? I mean, I could've left you for dead back in that rat hole. But no, not the main man. Cause I'm too soft for my own good. I save your brain, and you won't even talk to me. Man, where's your stinking gratitude?
I'll give you gratitude.
Oh, hold on. I haven't even punished you yet. For pretending you couldn't talk.
Punish me?
Consider yourself punished, bad boy. Just one more.
Stop, please! You crazy son of a... What the gag was that for?
To teach you a lesson. You gotta obey my orders immediately, unquestioningly, or...
I get the picture. No need to demonstrate again. You bastard.
All right, playtime's over. See that little speck of nothing? That's Earth. Soon as we hit atmosphere, I want you to tap into whatever primitive computer systems they got. I'm looking for a human geek goes by the name of Jones.
Boosh? Sold out already, Deve? I got your back up here.
Boosh Jacklin flipped open an aluminum photographer's case and exposed its valuable contents. He took out a clear polythene bag and ran an expert eye over it, mentally checking that there were 20 wraps.
Here you go.
He tossed the bag toward Deve, still framed in the open doorway, but his underling made no attempt to catch it. Suddenly, Deve shot backward, or was pulled, Boosh realized. A second figure pushed into the room and slammed the fortified door behind him, shutting Deve outside. Boosh was never more than a couple of feet from a gun. In his business, he couldn't afford to be. He snapped up the slim pistol that lay like a conversation piece on the coffee table and leveled it at the stranger.
One, tell me who you are before you die!
My name's Jones.
Means nothing to me! Who sent you?
Your mother, Boswell.
You found him yet?
The Spazfrag was crossing Antarctica, but Lobo was oblivious to the beauty of the icy wastes 20 miles below him. What was flashing before the bounty hunter's eyes were cred signs. A million of them. Minus Quarantino's share, sure, but 800K was still serious strutting cash.
Hurry up, Thought Brain. Unless you're looking for a few more jolts of the old zap juice.
Listen, Lobo. I got 183,311 John Joneses I'm trying to sift through here, and that's just in the Western Hemisphere.
Well, sift a little swifter, okay? Try a photo match.
Tartan Quarantino had provided a computer printout of a wanted man. Wanted geek, more like, Lobo had thought, looking at the photograph. In his experience, humans were pretty frail creatures. They broke easy.
I'm doing it! Frank, what did you last sleep die of?
You're asking me? Man, that's rich. You blew the fraggin' thing up! And I gotta say, my last SSCS was a lot less lippy than you. Hardly ever needed the juice.
Hey! I don't need the juice either.
Oh, yeah, you do. You're wasting time arguing when you ought to be sifting.
Your mother told me about your older brothers. Vincent and Sean, wasn't it?
Don't matter.
Boosh hadn't asked John to sit or even pointed his gun away, but the desire to pull the trigger seemed to have gone from his eyes.
They're dead.
John was about to say, I know how it feels to lose family. And he did know. But he realized how trite and meaningless it would sound. Boosh Jacklin was barely out of his teens. He ran with a gang that maybe even killed someone himself. It was a mark of his rep that he wouldn't show emotion.
What does the old lady want?
Old? She isn't even 40 yet, and her two older boys are dead. Shot. For drugs. She doesn't want you to go the same way. She doesn't want to spend the rest of her life grieving. She wants you to go home.
Boosh was unable to meet the detective's eyes.
How is she? I hadn't seen her since... since the funeral. She was crying her heart out. She tried to jump into Sean's grave.
John looked away tactfully, while the youngster recovered his composure.
I send her money.
Money is not what she wants. She wants her son. You. And she wants you alive. At home.
Yeah? Doing what exactly? A job? I can't do a job. I already do what I know.
His gaze flickered toward the aluminum case.
You deal in death, Boswell. Crack cocaine kills everything around it. Overdose or gunshot, the result is the same. The odds are stacked against you. Every day you stay in this filthy game is a day closer to it being game over. And when it happens, it's permanent.
I know.
Pardon?
I know. Maybe... maybe Mom's right.
Suddenly, the entire wall disintegrated in a storm of flying bricks and plasterboard. Boosh Jacklin raised both arms, warding off the rubble that flew at him. He had a fleeting impression of something massive and gleaming. A leather-gloved hand reached down to grab the Jones guy. And then they were gone, leaving Boosh cradling his gun, wondering what the heck had happened. Had he but known it, he had just seen his first and last spaz frag.
Oh, to hell with this.
He fell to his knees in the ruins of the apartment, digging in the debris with his bare hands, scrabbling for the aluminum case. He'd worry about his mother later. Lobo's bike landed on the roof of a 7-story apartment building adjacent to the dealer's safe house. Lobo dropped John Jones unceremoniously onto the roof, then pulled a pair of handcuffs from a hatch in the bike's side. He swung himself off the saddle and grabbed the detective's arm.
Would you care to explain what's going on?
The name's Lobo. I'm an officially licensed bounty hunter.
I've heard of you.
Then you'll know I don't mess around. John Jones, by order of the warrant in my back pocket, I'm placing you under arrest with the intention of taking you back to stand trial.
Jones looked dumbfounded.
Don't let him do it, pal! The first chance he gets, the bastard will slice out your brain and turn you into his slave!
Shut up, you! Resist, and I'll hurt you bad. Escape, and I'll hurt you worse. They want you alive, but they never said nothing about how many broken bones and limbs I can give you. Or internal damage, for that matter.
He held out the handcuffs toward the detective.
So, what's it to be, Jonesy? Your choice, dude.
I think there's been a mistake. I've never committed any crime.
That's one for the lawyers, right, Jonesy? Besides, I've never met a guilty man yet who admitted it.
Except me. I freely admit everything I ever did. And I'm proud to say I'm proud of it.
Well, you are, Zemtex, is juiced.
That shut him up.
Perhaps it would help things if I appeared in my true identity.
It would help things if you stuck out your wrists and let me.
John Jones had begun to change. His skin turned green. His head swelled out, bald, almost bulbous. His eyebrows became a great, craggy carapace. From under it, red, alien eyes blazed.
Oh, frag me. A shapeshifter. I should have known it. This job was way too simple for the reward involved.
The slacks and shirt and jacket had vanished too. They were replaced by a costume consisting of tight shorts and a huge red X emblazoned across his chest. His musculature was as impressive as Lobo's own. A voluminous dark blue cape was fastened at his neck.
My name is Jones. John Jones. Also known as the Martian Manhunter.
Detective John Jones is what you might call my human alter ego.
Ah, no. Nobody told me you was a fragging superhero to boot. Not that it makes any difference. I still got my warrant on you. Man or Martian monkey, I'm taking you in.
Let me see this warrant. I would like to witness it for myself.
Are you calling me a liar, Baldy? Because that's one frag of a serious mistake.
Lobo was a lot of things. A killer, a bully, an aggressive, loudmouthed troublemaker. But the one thing he wasn't was a liar. In fact, he prided himself on his honesty. Once Lobo had made a promise, he kept it. Once he had taken on a job, he saw it through. His determination to keep his word was one of the few decent character traits he possessed.
No, I am merely asking to see the warrant you claim accuses me.
Lobo spoke over his shoulder, but his gaze never left the Manhunter's.
Your senses are witness, Zemtex. Record this. The creep refuses to come peacefully. I am resorting to violence as a last resort.
He grinned and licked his lips with an improbably long tongue.
Not that I ain't gonna enjoy it.
It was a straight right that would have felled a small building. John Jones staggered back a step, but didn't go down.
Whoever you are, Zemtex, note also that Lobo struck the first blow. Whatever happens to him now is his own responsibility.
What do you mean, what happens to me? Nothing's gonna happen to me, dude. But I am, however, gonna rip off your stupid green head and feed it to...
He glanced around for inspiration, but the only animals he could see were the pigeons sitting at the far end of the parapet.
Now what the hell, I'll eat it myself.
With radishes, no doubt?
Manhunter's own fist drove a pile driver into Lobo's gut. The bounty hunter stooped forward slightly, just far enough for John Jones's next punch to land flush on his jaw. Lobo soared back through the air and smashed into a satellite receiver dish.
I like a little resistance. Makes the end result so much more satisfying.
He whipped his arm, unraveling the heavy chain that wound around it from wrist to elbow, and swung the deadly hook in one smooth, well-practiced movement. The Manhunter jerked his head aside so that the lethal-looking hook whistled past his ear. But Lobo shook his arm again, and the hook changed its trajectory, curling the chain around the Martian's neck. Lobo jerked it taut like a strangling cord. Then he yanked hard, pulling his foe off his feet. Lobo dived on top of him, swinging wildly with his free hand. The Manhunter managed to force him over, rolling so that he was on top. Lobo grimaced. The guy's fists had the power to hurt him, but so what? The main man had faced a lot tougher opposition than this, and he always whooped their asses good. Besides, he liked being hurt. It gave him a really strong incentive to deliver some hurt right back. And on top of everything else, he'd never live it down with Jonas and the guys if he was beaten by a bald superhero.
Give him hell, Jonesy!
The bike's external cameras provided Zemtex with a pretty good view of the action.
It's time somebody shut that bastard's big mouth!
Enraged, Lobo managed to bend his legs and bring his feet up against the Martian's chest. Just as John succeeded in untangling the chain from around his neck, Lobo forcefully straightened his legs. The Manhunter soared away from him, demolishing an air conditioning unit, before skidding heavily into the low brick parapet. Dislodged by the impact, several bricks went plunging over the edge. Lobo didn't give his enemy time to recover, but came rushing at him with a hook flailing.
Beginning to get the message, Mr. Mars? Beginning to hurt yet?
Manhunter dived away before the next blow landed. The swinging hook gouged into the parapet wall, and a dozen more bricks went plummeting to the street 7 stories below.
You're only delaying the inevitable, dude.
When the Martian turned back to face him, Lobo was surprised to see he was hefting a 6-foot length of fallen aerial. As Lobo swung his chain again, Jones lunged. The chain wrapped itself around the aerial, and Jones deftly wrenched it from Lobo's grip.
If we must fight, let us do it fairly.
Get you, Frog Face. Listen, you're resisting arrest, which means I have legal backing to do whatever the frag I want. For instance,
Lobo unstrapped the large dagger he wore at his belt. It glinted wickedly in the New York sun.
I think I'll start by cutting off some of your bits.
The Martian shook his head.
Sadly, it is not only humans who appear to be obsessed with violence.
Yeah, and sex runs a close second. Now it's about time I showed you some serious violence!
The Martian shoulder-charged him. They stumbled back together, Lobo trying in vain to stab at his foe, as Jones fought determinedly to keep hold of Lobo's knife hand. Each used his free hand to rain down blows, each constantly shifting position, trying to keep the other off balance.
You ain't a bad fighter, or a hero.
Lobo relaxed his arm momentarily, but the Martian wasn't fooled by the stunt. His grip remained in place.
If you really want to do this, I have a whole repertoire of abilities I have not yet brought to bear.
Yeah, bring it on, Baldy.
Lobo immediately wished that he hadn't said that. He felt what seemed like a steam hammer suddenly appear inside his head. The thing started slamming around like it wanted to get out of there. And every time it slammed, Lobo thought his head was going to explode.
Mind games. The creep's some sort of telepath.
He made a mental note to charge Quarantino an extra fee for withholding pertinent information. The bounty hunter dropped the knife and brought both arms up simultaneously. Ow! His clenched fists crunched into the Martian's ears.
You want to play rough, Baldy? Fine by me. The angrier you make me, the more I'm gonna enjoy crippling you.
That's not going to happen.
The Spaz Frag's external camera swiveled toward the new arrival.
Whoa, you're in for it now, Lobo. Baldy's called in reinforcements. I recognize you, Big Blue. That's what they call you out in the galaxy. Now don't you hold back none. Crush that sucker, Lobo, good. I wanna dance on his grave.
I presume you're speaking metaphorically?
Metaphorically?
Is there a reason for this? John? Lobo?
Is there a reason for you sticking your interfering nose in? I'm a legally constituted bounty hunter making a legally valid arrest. I got a bald guy refuses to come quietly, and now I got your sorry butt on my case too. I'm warning you, Superman. This creep is wanted. You get involved, you're gonna find yourself with a price on your head. And I know about a zillion bounty hunters who'd come after you for fragging free.
Lobo thrust his face in Superman's and stabbed a finger against the S emblem on his chest.
Of course, if you want to fight, Supes, I'm happy to oblige. We've done it before, right? In fact, why don't you call in the rest of the Justice League, too? Man, I'll laugh like a sewer rat when I see you all in some galactic jail.
Are you quite finished? You did not accede to my request to see the warrant.
Why not, Lobo? Is it because you think you might have made a mistake?
Oh, Fiddle's giz.
Lobo had just used the foulest expletive in the Zarnian language.
I already went through this with Baldy. But if it keeps you sweet, Super Toots.
Lobo dug his hand in his back pocket and pulled out a crumpled, badly creased sheet of paper. Fastidiously, he unfolded it, then shoved it forward for Manhunter and Superman to read. Underneath a grainy photograph of the Manhunter's human guise, it said, Wanted, alive. Reward, 1,000,000 creds. John Jones, Planet Earth. Not for general tender. Reserved job, Lobo only. On the back it bore the legend, Valid under galactic law, and it was stamped, Authorized by the Directorate of the Imperium of Verk.
The Verkan Imperium? I've never heard of it.
That don't matter, squat. The Verkans probably never heard of you either, but you don't hear them whining about it.
He folded the poster and put it back in his pocket.
Okay, what say we reconvene the melee? Let's see, I think I was just about to stiff the green guy. But if you want to play tag team, that's okay by me.
You know I don't give into threats, Lobo. I think we'd do well to check this out. For a start, what's John's crime supposed to be? It isn't even mentioned on your poster, and it's debatable whether any crime committed in John's Earth identity, as your warrant says, could be held attributable to his Martian identity.
You should have been a super lawyer. The only words missing from that piece of gobbledygook were allegedly in fee note. So, I guess it's gonna be lumps all around before I get this turkey home.
If that's the way you want it,
Superman clenched his fists and prepared to fight. When he and Lobo had traded blows in the past, no clear winner had been decided. The Man of Steel would have preferred to talk the situation out, but he knew from bitter experience that listening wasn't Lobo's forte.
No, Superman. It is over. His warrant appears to be valid, even if I do not understand the reason for it. I will go willingly with him to find out what lurks at the bottom of this affair.
But it could be a trap.
I hardly think so, else why would Lobo have confronted me here? Judging by the size of the reward, these Vurcans think I have done something extremely criminal. Lobo, understand that I come of my own free will. I give my word I will not try to escape.
I'm cuffing you anyway, Baldy. Up till now, you ain't exactly been a model prisoner.
Have it your way.
I always do.
Are you sure you're doing the right thing, John?
Course he is. Like a superhero who enforces the law can't go around breaking it, right? Turn around, Jones.
Superman could only stand by, feeling totally helpless, as Lobo snapped slimline cuffs with unbreakable molecular centers on the Martian's wrists. The bounty hunter gestured to the bike.
Climb aboard, and if the control system talks to you, ignore it.
Wrists cuffed behind his back, Manhunter climbed awkwardly onto the pillion. Then Lobo swung himself onto the front seat.
Nice seeing you, Big Blue. And rest assured, it doubles my pleasure knowing I'm taking back one of your friends. Man, I'd almost do it for nothing. Almost.
Superman stood on the roof for long moments, watching as the space bike arrowed up into the stratosphere.
This doesn't make sense.
John Jones, in both his identities, was the straightest guy Superman had ever met, as well as one of the most powerful. In addition to the ability to fly, John possessed amazing super strength. His green skin was virtually invulnerable to any normal attack. He could turn himself invisible. He was a shapeshifter, able to adopt any form he chose. And he was a telepath of astonishing power. He could read minds, or manipulate them, or worse, much worse. Stranded on Earth, John had dedicated his life to justice, always ready to help the weak and downtrodden. His incredible powers were pledged to the service of humankind. It was inconceivable he would ever commit any crime.
My replacement at the Watchtower is going to have to do a double shift. I'd be failing John if I didn't look into this.
Superman!
Officers?
Somebody called in a disturbance. Big guys fighting, they said.
The officer stared at the trashed roof furniture and broken parapet.
A slight understatement, I'd say. What happened?
There was a fight. But don't worry. Nobody was hurt.
Don't suppose nobody left a check for the damage, neither.
We are the Alpha, the first and the last. All else will die.
Traveling at warp speed is not dissimilar to having your intestines torn out with a rusty crochet hook. Slowly. Some space travelers develop stomach cramps that stay with them for the rest of their lives. Some spend their entire journey vomiting in the restroom. Others learn to tolerate the painful twinges and spasms. While a few, like Lobo, actively enjoy the feeling of discomfort. But Lobo had no idea how John Jones was reacting. The Martian's guts might have imploded for all he was letting on. Jones hadn't uttered a single word since they left that mudball Earth. And Zemtex had retreated into a sullen silence after Lobo jolted him with the promised juice. Unusually, the bounty hunter hadn't amused himself by taunting either of them. He was too busy dreaming about what 800K would bring him. A couple of weeks on one of the Babe Worlds, a sex-oriented vacation destination for starters. They catered for every taste, every combination, every number of participants. Aliens, humanoids, robots. On a Babe World, you took your pick and swapped what you didn't like. It goes without saying that all drugs were legal. Lobo remembered his last trip there. He'd scored a quarter of a mil for bringing in a vegan starfragger by the name of Sarlon. The creep was a total bubblehead who lived in his own fantasy world. Unluckily for several solar systems, he had an idiot savant genius for building bombs that could set off stellar chain reactions. Sorlon didn't do it for financial gain, or because he was spurned by his one true love, or because his nanny spanked him when he was a boy. He just liked watching cosmic explosions. Lobo could relate to that. He was a Big Bang aficionado himself. When Lobo beat him to a paste, the Vegan came quietly enough.
Yeah, that was some vacation. Anita, Sepulchra, ooh, and that Hartferangian chick with the original anatomy.
Two bottles of hooch a day, all the cigars he could smoke, playing the casinos at night, and the ladies afterward. You didn't know what a shindig was until you partied on a babe world. Fights? Man, he'd had some brilliant fights. All that testosterone running wild had the guys on a knife edge. It didn't take much goading to tip them over into violence. In a word, for Lobo, heaven. The only reason the management didn't throw Lobo out was because he'd probably have battered them into submission, too. Plus, of course, he was a big spender. He could see some babe world employee sitting in an office someplace, toting up the damage Lobo caused on his calculator, balancing it against how freely the main man was spending.
Yo, Zemtex, how far are we from the A9 belt?
There was a slight pause, no doubt while Zemtex thought about a rude reply and the electric shock that would undoubtedly follow.
Couple of hours.
Cool. Divert to Al's diner.
The bounty hunter pictured Darlene, Al's luscious waitress.
They're gonna be tickled pink to see the bow.
Take it they've been lobotomized then.
But Lobo wasn't listening. He was lost in a vision of Darlene, who didn't seem to have many clothes on. The never-ending thump and screech of Lobo's music irritated John. No wonder Lobo was such a bad-tempered oaf, with such a cacophony blaring constantly in his ears. The Manhunter used subtle Martian meditation techniques to try to blank it out. John Jones had long been used to keeping his own company. Apart from his penchant for remaining silent unless he had something worth saying, there were few other people alive he could really talk to. For at the very core of his being, the Manhunter carried an infinite sadness. He was unique, the last of his kind, the only Martian in all existence. His parents, his wife, his son, his entire race had succumbed to an incurable plague. John survived because a human scientist experimenting with a teleport beam inadvertently transported him to Earth. While he tried to make sense of the weird new world on which he found himself, his people fell in their millions and died like flies. By the time John was able to return to the Red Planet, it was all over. Mars had become a mausoleum. There were so many dead. Even his great powers could never bury them all. He left them where they lay. In the chill winds of the thin Martian atmosphere, flesh and bone would soon crumble into dust. In only a few decades, nobody would ever know that a peace-loving race had evolved and died there. Nobody except John Jones, a single individual mourning for the population of an entire world. And now he was on his way to places unknown, accused as a criminal. He was only glad he had been able to deliver his message to Boswell Jacklin before the bounty hunter apprehended him. Mrs. Jacklin's urgent anxiety had really got to him. John hoped that her son had sense enough to heed her and go home. A solitary asteroid tumbled past them, flashing red as it caught the rays of some distant sun.
Like Mars, the red planet, the dead planet.
Beneath his craggy brow, the Manhunter's red eyes drank in the beauty of the cosmos, stars without end. Lobo was a brutal, vulgar thug, more a force of nature than a man. Except for his insistence that he was honest, the bounty hunter appeared to have no redeeming features. Superman had talked of Lobo several times, always disparagingly. John knew his friend loathed everything the bounty hunter stood for. John preferred not to be judgmental, but with Lobo that was nearly impossible. But when all was said and done, John had to admit that Lobo was only doing his job. He just wasn't going about it very pleasantly. John combed his phenomenal memory, striving to dredge up anything that might have occasioned the Birkin Imperium's warrant. He found nothing. If he had committed a crime, then it was without his knowledge. Or, and this was much more likely, it was a simple case of mistaken identity. In a galaxy as diverse and densely populated as the Milky Way, identity theft was a serious and growing problem. Although, how anybody could have worked out his Earth identity was a major mystery in itself. But John knew that, when it came to crime, a great many minds were capable of amazing ingenuity. The space bike began to slow. Ahead, John saw the E9 asteroid belt. Almost a billion miles long, it twisted and curved back on itself like some giant warped donut. The rocks that formed it varied in size from specks of dust up to trillions of tons, all tied to each other by the invisible bonds of complex gravitational forces. Whoever Al was, he sighted his diner wisely. Many of the larger asteroids contained significant deposits of a shiny obsidian-like mineral used in the heat shields of interstellar craft. A dozen small mining operations had set up base in the belt. As the diner was the only place with a liquor license within a half-day's travel, Al would surely do good business. The diner was a relatively small place, perched on one end of a major mining asteroid. The crushing plant was a mile away, silhouetted against the stars. It seemed to crouch like some prehistoric predator, waiting to rend its prey. Subterranean hydroponic plant farms produced a light, though breathable, atmosphere that leaked away into space and needed constant replenishment. A massive advertising billboard stood over the diner building, dwarfing it. Its twinkling new neon lights looked incongruous, even absurd, against the background curtain of stars. A smaller sign in the diner's large reinforced observation window read, "Beer, always."
Ah, beer. Music to my taste buds.
Lobo swung the spaz frag smoothly into an empty docking bay.
I will remain here.
No, actually, you won't remain here. You'll accompany me inside so's I can keep my beady eye on you. And if you want to buy me a few beers, hey, I won't complain.
I do not drink.
Great, I'll have yours as well.
Awkwardly, because his hands were still cuffed behind his back, John swung himself off the bike. The new neon twinkled vermilion as he climbed the three steps up to the front entrance and followed Lobo inside. Lobo had closed down the weapon system when he got off the bike, but the radio was still on. And hell, did Zemtex hate that music. How could anybody listen to it and remain sane? If Zemtex had still had ears, his brain would have been running out of them. He turned down the volume.
Bastard, bastard, bastard!
Only a day ago, Zemtex was a big-deal gang leader, respected, well, okay, feared by the galaxy at large. Now his gang was dead or fled. He had no way of retrieving his stashed loot. His own body was lying like a side of beef in an insanely high radiation zone, and his brain was stuck inside a Spaz Frag 5000 belonging to a homicidal maniac.
Jeez, how the mighty have fallen.
Weird how quickly the bike's control system had wired him into itself. It had given him that annoying metaphysical itch that he could never scratch, but that aside, there appeared to be no problems. Zemtex could still think clearly. The electrical override built into the system meant he had to do what Lobo demanded, but at least his thoughts were his own. He dreamed briefly of making a run for it, just heading off into space, Zemtex the Spaz Frag. He certainly had plenty of firepower at his command, given the space bike's armaments. He'd never heard of a bike leading an outlaw gang before, but nobody had heard of a guy who could blow things up by looking at them before either. There was always a first time for everything. Not that he was going anywhere, of course. The bike would only start once Lobo had applied his handprint to the recognition pad that also acted to ignite the miniaturized nuclear engine. Being on the inside, so to speak, Zemtex knew from the bike's databanks that Lobo had stolen it, then re-engineered it for his own use.
Of course! What an ass I am! Why didn't I think of this before?
Lobo had left the subspace radio on. Zemtex began to explore the possibility of an outward transmission of his own.
Al, how you doing, you chubby old son of a gun?
Al Fratowski was hunched over the open cooking range in the center of the diner, rustling up four Al's Big Boy all-day breakfasts with a culinary skill that had long since made his establishment the discerning space trucker's eatery of choice. Now he was scooping up the asteroid miners, too, attracting them with his mouth-watering mix of fats, oils, salts, and cholesterols. The coffee wasn't bad, either. Now, Al fought the churning feeling that suddenly threatened to evacuate his bowels. He knew that voice, knew it only too well. It was the voice that announced the end of the world. Forcing a smile onto his face, steeling his nerves, Al nipped the final burger and turned to greet the newcomer.
Oh boy, it's always great to see you.
This was an outright lie. Lobo had been in Al's diner on many occasions. The bounty hunter had a real soft spot for Al's waitress, the blonde, voluptuous Darlene. Anytime he was in the neighborhood, he liked to pop in for burgers, beer, and a little flirtation. Darlene was no great fan of Lobo's vulgar manners, but she forgave him because that's what macho men were like. And nobody was more macho than Lobo. That wouldn't be so bad, but Lobo was always getting into fights. In fact, the only reason Al had had to close the diner at all was because the main man had wrecked the place in a battle with a half-dozen tough truckers. The insurance had covered the damage, but he'd only reopened yesterday. If Lobo wrecked it again today, the insurers might not stump up a second time. Lobo was glancing around, seeing who was in. A group of miners sat at the far end, a dozen or so of them around one big table, feasting on shrimp burgers and strong booze.
Yo, gents!
From the way Lobo's eyes narrowed, Al suspected he was considering taking umbrage at the miners' grunts. Quickly, Al tried to divert his attention.
So, who's the prisoner?
Just some green geek. Goes by the name Baldy. If he wants to eat, he pays his own fraggin' way.
Hi, Lobo.
Al watched as Lobo turned to see Darlene standing there. She was wearing her usual uniform, the one that accentuated all of her curves, without actually revealing any of her secrets. Her skirt was short, her heels were high, and her legs just seemed to go on forever. There wasn't a heterosexual humanoid in the galaxy who wouldn't cut off his left hand, or almost any other appendage, for a night with Darlene. The bounty hunter's features softened at once, and the smile on his face was of genuine pleasure.
Darlene, the most beautiful girl in the universe.
He reached out and took her hand. Gently, he raised it to his lips. Darlene flushed. She tossed her blonde hair, and her deep blue eyes twinkled. Al knew that she liked Lobo almost as much as the beau liked her. In fact, she was just about the only person Al knew who could keep Lobo cool, calm, and collected. It was a great pity she'd been on her off day when he fought the truckers. Seeing how badly the battle had damaged the diner, Al had thought it must have been about something serious. But no, a trucker had failed to pass the salt as quickly as Lobo would have liked. It was strange, Al thought now, seeing a maniac like the beau acting the part of a lovelorn suitor. He damn near killed one of those truck drivers last time, and yet here he was, holding Darlene's hand so delicately you'd think she was made of porcelain. Talk about a velvet glove on an iron fist. Darlene scooped up a couple of menus from the counter and gestured to two seats in a window booth. Al threw her a silent thank you, knowing that she'd deliberately put the bounty hunter at his charge as far away from the miners as she could. Lobo and his prisoner sat down. Lobo scanned the menu, while the big green guy in the cape just sat. He had a quiet dignity about him, almost an aloofness, that Al didn't usually see in his customers. Without waiting to be asked, Darlene opened a chilled can of strong booze and handed it to Lobo. Baldy winced, Al noticed. Obviously, he was no fan of Lobo's either. But then, apart from Darlene, maybe, who was? The big galoot got on just about everybody's wrong side. He was either oblivious to the annoyance he caused, or he enjoyed it so much he couldn't stop. Al had long since ceased to wonder what made the main man the way he was.
Beg pardon, Darlene. What do you recommend, babe?
Al got a fresh supply of shrimp in this morning.
Say no more. Double shrimp burger it is.
Don't stint on the fries. And don't shirk on Al's special sauce, either.
And for your friend?
Ain't no friend of mine, sweet buns. Are you hungry, Baldy?
Thank you, no.
Baldy was staring out the window, watching the spinning asteroids and the stars beyond. The look in his eyes was almost one of yearning, Al thought. Al put two shrimp patties on the grill and started mixing his special sauce. He really ought to patent the stuff. Shrimp tasted okay, but it was the sauce that had them coming back for more.
One more round for the road, honey.
Darlene took another dozen cans of beer out of the cooler, put them on a tray, and headed for the miners. They'd been drinking and eating for several hours, but they still seemed to be in good humor. They'd booked a shuttle from the mine to pick them up and take them back to their barracks.
The shuttle will be arriving soon, and they'll get aboard and go away, and then Lobo will go, and everything will be all right, and my diner won't get wrecked again.
How wrong could one small, nervous diner owner be?
Hand over your cash or die!
The psychopathic robot's hapless victim stared nervously at the pipe gun leveled at his head, its barrel almost big enough to swallow him whole.
Take it easy, friend. I am not resisting. Wallet's in my pocket.
Starboot stepped forward and rammed his hand inside the alien's jacket. It came out holding a fat, shiny brown money clip.
Jackpot, guys. Excellent. You didn't have to do that. He cooperated. Witness elimination program. Whatever.
Starboot shook his head. The robot was crazy. No other word for it. What it needed was an overhaul by a team of mechanics specializing in screwed-up wiring. Robots weren't supposed to kill anybody. This one killed whenever it felt like it. Except for the gang, of course. It seemed to like the gang. If indeed it liked anything at all, apart from killing. At least it hadn't killed any of them. Starboot, the robot, and the third survivor of the encounter with Lobo had blown planet as fast as they could. They'd heard of Lobo's fantastic tracking ability. It was said he could follow the trail of a single molecule from one end of the galaxy to the other by smell alone. And he'd been close enough to get a whiff of them. They needed to put as much distance between that blighted green rad zone and themselves as possible. Of course, the rewards on them were small beer, so it might not be worth the main man's while to pursue them further. But with somebody like Lobo, it was best not to take chances. Most of the gang had learned that the hard way. They'd run low on fuel. Zemtex had stashed all their loot, and he was the only one who knew where. Years of robbing and pillaging, and now they didn't even have a cred among them. They docked at an interplanetary way station and raised the necessary money by robbing a few aliens. Starboot and his companions made their way back to their space pod.
We got enough here to take us clear to the fringe worlds. We lose ourselves on one of the outlaw planets, and we'll never see Lobo again. I wish to see him. I wish to kill him.
Starboot swung the entry hatch open and nodded brusquely.
Yeah. Maybe he'll just come after us and you can kill him, and then we'll all live happily ever after. Until Lobo unkills himself again.
Derez, the third gang member, settled into the pilot's chair.
Starboot! Derez! Did you guys get away? Are you getting this?
Zemtex?
Starboot grabbed the microphone. Suddenly things were looking better.
Did you escape too, boss?
Not exactly. Sort of.
What happened?
Never mind that now. This is urgent. I'm at a place called Al's Diner on the A9 belt.
Yeah, I know it. The shrimp burger's to die for. What about Lobo?
Yeah, he's here too.
I don't know if it's a good idea for us to come get you, boss. I mean, Lobo killed 16 of us. Even with the psycho droid on our side, we don't stand much chance.
Nonsense. I will kill him.
He's also got a prisoner here with a 1,000,000 cred bounty on his head.
1,000,000 creds? We sure could use some of that. We're stuck on a station mugging aliens.
Ain't you got a vehicle, boss? Couldn't you just bring the prisoner to us?
Yes, I have a vehicle, but no, I can't bring him. Now, I've been thinking. I know Lobo's course. You can cut him off and snatch me and the prisoner. And I know exactly how to do it.
You're always good at coming up with plans, Zebtex. We're on our way.
As the sleek spacecraft shot away from the space station, all Starboot could think of was a million creds. This would set them all up for life. And that wasn't even counting the loot they had already. Oh, happy day. John Jones watched the lovely waitress as she gracefully carried the tray of beer to the far end of the diner. He felt no attraction to her himself, but he could see why she would drive some men wild. Martians were attracted only by their own kind, and his kind were gone. He would never, not if he lived to be 1,000, no love again. He saw that Lobo had swiveled in his seat, eyes trailing Darlene like a lovesick puppy. The main man had revealed a different side of himself, a side John would never have suspected. He did have feelings. A pretty girl could turn him weak at the knees, as well as hot under the collar.
Oh, come on, honey. Loosen up a little.
John's attention snapped back to the miners. One of them had grasped Darlene's arm and was trying to pull her down onto his knee. She struggled against him, doing her best to remain good-natured about the assault on her person, but John could read in her eyes the anger that she felt. No doubt a girl as pretty as Darlene often had to fend off unwanted attentions.
I promise I'll give you a real good tip.
Please, this isn't funny.
Look, you can earn yourself a big bonus here. Just show a hard-working Joe a little kindness, eh?
Please!
The Manhunter had seen enough. No female deserved to be treated that way, as if she were an object. He sent out a muted telepathic pulse and watched the miner shake his head in sudden pain, but his grip on Darlene's arm never loosened. John Jones started to get to his feet.
Sit down!
Lobo shoved the palm of his hand in John's face and forced him roughly back into his seat.
The main man'll handle this.
Manhunter caught the terrified look on Al's face as Lobo strode purposefully to the other end of the room. Al had his palms pressed together, as if he were praying. Lobo loomed over the seated group.
Excuse me, gents. I was wondering if I could have a word.
Sure, here's a word. Scram!
Funny. Look, I'm trying to be nice. Just let the lady go.
Why don't you make me?
Lobo moved so fast, John could hardly believe it.
How's that?
For a moment, the miner continued to glare at Lobo. Then, with a start, he looked down at his hand, or rather, the stump where his hand used to be. While their colleague desperately tried to wrap the tablecloth around his bloody stump, the other miners leapt to their feet. Lobo grabbed the edge of their table and wrenched it upward. The high-stress steel table legs were bolted to the floor, but Lobo had no trouble ripping them free. Holding the heavy tabletop like a shield, he slammed it into several of the miners. Lobo didn't wait for the others to rally and attack. Coolly and methodically, he merely battered them into unconsciousness, using his fists, his feet, and one of the steel table legs he had torn out of the floor. Yeah! Plates and cutlery flew everywhere. Several pieces of cutlery directly into the flesh of a few miners. Another miner soared through the air and landed on the grill. Pots and pans and hot cooking oil spilled all over. John saw Al snatch up a fire extinguisher and douse the embryonic flames. Then Lobo snatched the fire extinguisher from Al and rammed it forcefully into a miner's mouth. Foam came spurting out of the man's nostrils, and he fell to the floor. The last miner on his feet lunged with a gleaming knife. Lobo flipped him over his shoulder, and he skidded along the floor to fetch up close to John. The man staggered upright, pulling a gun from a holster at the back of his belt. The miner took careful aim at Lobo's head. but the manhunter's foot stamped down hard on his leg. Then, John kicked him in the face. The whole thing was over in less than a minute. Lobo dusted his hands, walked back over to the booth, and sat down opposite John.
Thought I told you to keep out of this. Hey, Al, where's that shrimp burger? I'm starving here, man!
Al was standing by the central range, looking around him in stunned dismay. Much of the diner interior was trashed. Most of the shrimp and all of his sauce decorated the floor. Al's shoulders slumped, a defeated man, and John thought he saw a tear glint in one eye.
Shrimp burger's 86th.
Aw, come on, Al, don't take it like that. It wasn't my fault. I was protecting Darlene's honor is all.
Darlene was standing against the wall, staring aghast at the disembodied hand that had fallen to the floor at her feet. Through the ob window, John saw an approaching shuttle. Lobo noticed it too.
Better tell these guys their ride's here.
John Jones shook his head. Lobo had him confounded. The bounty hunter was a mass of contradictions. Al walked up to their table, his slow gait betraying his reluctance to do what he was going to do.
Lobo, this is the second time you've trashed my diner. I know it wasn't your fault, but the end result's the same. My diner's trashed. I don't know if the insurance will pay up a second time. I'm not a rich man, Lobo. I can't afford this. If you do it again, I'm gonna have to bar you.
John almost smiled as Lobo's eyes widened in horror. John knew what he was thinking. If he was barred, he wouldn't see Darlene again. But then the bounty hunter's expression hardened. Now he was clearly asking himself how Al could ever stop the main man from doing anything. Then Lobo looked thoughtful. Obviously, he was weighing up the pros and cons. Of course, he could barge his way into the diner and see Darlene whenever he wanted. But then, Darlene wouldn't be happy to see him, because Al didn't want him there. Finally, Lobo came to a decision.
Tell you what, Al. I'm expecting a real fat reward on Baldy. What say I make good the damage out of that?
Al stuck his hand out, almost as quickly as Lobo had unsheathed the knife.
It's a deal.
They solemnly shook on it. Darlene was cheerful again as she came up to stand beside the seated Lobo. She stooped slightly and kissed him on the cheek. Was that a blush John saw under the Zarnian's pale skin?
Oh, Lobo, you're such a gentleman.
You bet your sweet butt I am.
Lobo grinned happily and proceeded to playfully pinch the aforementioned sweet butt. This time, John Jones allowed himself a smile. A tiny red and blue figure streaked through the star-spangled cosmos. On Earth, Superman was the world's greatest hero. He used his powers of super strength, flight, and invulnerability to help humankind. On Earth, he was the biggest fish in a relatively small pond. But out here, in the wastes of interstellar space, even Superman's amazing powers were dwarfed by the sheer immensity of the galaxy. Far off to one side, a giant red star was pulsating slowly as it entered its death throes. For the next million years, maybe more, it would oscillate between a dull red glow and a fiery beacon. Then, when the star's own gravity could no longer contain its internal upheavals, it would explode. All life for billions of miles around would be annihilated, unless its civilization had advanced sufficiently for space travel. He sometimes wondered if all evolution boiled down to that one simple race. Get smart enough to leave your planet before the star that gave it life exploded. The mere thought was enough to send a shiver of grief reverberating through the Man of Steel's heart. His skin could repel bullets. He could withstand the fiery heat of a blast furnace and the icy cold of space. But his emotions were the same as any man's. He remembered Krypton, his own world. Superman had stopped off on the moon before commencing his journey to check out what data the Watchtower's supercomputers held on the Imperium of Verk. It puzzled, but didn't surprise him to learn, that Verk was tiny, inhabited by primitives who had no contact with civilized worlds. Far ahead, his telescopic vision picked out his first glimpse of the Barbie worlds. Somewhere out there he would find Tartan Quarantino's bounty hunting agency, and hopefully, the answer to the madness of the Manhunter's arrest.
Bottle of whiskey, Koenig. 3 glasses. And water for the Arcturan.
Coming right up, Angel Eyes, sir.
The barman reached up on the shelf for a bottle, stealing a surreptitious glance at Angel Eyes and his 3 companions. A lot of the bounty hunters were scary guys, but Angel Eyes and his cohorts frightened Koenig more than anybody, except maybe Lobo. Angel Eyes was bad enough on his own. 7 feet tall, gaunt and muscular without being bulky, he was a standard humanoid alien, except for his eyes. They were a bright golden yellow and had no pupils. Looking into his face was like staring at an angel, hence the nickname. Only this was an angel of death. Randon and Vert, Angel Eyes' gunsels, were Kunz, one of the most vicious races discovered anywhere in the galaxy. They were almost as tall as Angel Eyes, but broader and a whole lot hairier. Their tiny eyes glinted aggressively. Their curiously flattened faces, coupled with the sharp fangs that lined their mouths, gave them the appearance of mutant animals, for whom killing was a way of life. But it was the 4th member of the bounty hunting team that really frightened Koenig, and if truth were known, many of the other bounty hunters as well. The Arcturan came from a world where technology was unknown, and magic was the order of the day. His name was Kabael, but few ever called him that. His dark powers made everyone feel uneasy, and there was always the fear that the name itself had some sort of magic effect on anyone who uttered it. The Arcturan was small compared to his companions, well under 6 feet. He wore a plain black robe, like a monk's habit, with a hood that enveloped his head and left his face wreathed in permanent shadows. His shoulders were slightly hunched, and the long skeletal fingers that reached to take the water jug gave the Meringian barman the creeps. Fascinated, despite himself, Koenig watched out the corner of his eye as the Arcturan placed the tip of 1 skinny finger on the surface of the water. The water level fell, as if he was drinking by osmosis. A cold sweat broke out on Koenig's hairless body. 15 years he'd been working here, serving drinks to professional killers. He listened to their drunken stories, their financial troubles, their romantic woes. When they made a big score, he shared their tales of death and debauchery. And though he'd never admit it to anyone, deep in his heart, he hated every minute. These guys terrified him. The only thing Koenig wanted was to get away. He'd been saving all he could from his wages since day one, but he still didn't have enough even for one day on Babe World. Some of the drunken thugs he served had spent weeks there. The Kund Randon was about to take a slug of his drink, but his hand froze halfway to his mouth. He nodded toward the bar entrance.
Get a load of that. Must be Ladies' Day.
His brother Vert looked toward the door.
Maybe she wants a job, big blue bounty killer.
The Arcturan didn't look up, but Angel Eyes flashed a golden glance in the direction of the doorway. Koenig looked too. Superman stood there, a riot of red and blue amongst the dowdy, unwashed bounty hunters. Koenig saw the stone killer called Quietus wink at his companions.
Watch this.
As Superman approached, Quietus stealthily stuck out his foot. Maybe he'd seen Lobo trip the Kund earlier and thought he could get a cheap laugh. But Superman didn't trip. He just kept walking.
I beg your pardon. I didn't see you there.
Leaving the bounty hunter to his pain, the Man of Steel reached the bar.
Well, what do you know? It's an alien. What can I do for you?
You can take me to your leader.
I'm sorry, Superman.
Tartan Quarantino fingered his bow tie in that nervous way of his, shaking his head at the same time.
I'm not at liberty to divulge any information on the subject of the Imperium of Verk. Commercial confidentiality, you understand.
I understand. What I really want to know is, what is the crime listed for John Jones?
They were sitting in Quarantino's office, one whole wall of which was an observation window with a fabulous view of the Milky Way. Suddenly, the ob window became a huge monitor screen, but the only words displayed on it were, "No relevant data."
I don't know.
Superman gazed at him intensely.
You're telling me you hired a psychopath like Lobo to hunt John down, and you don't even know why?
Psychopath or not, Lobo has an official warrant, and I'm an agent, not a judge. Doesn't matter to me what a criminal does. My only concern is that I receive legal notification, stamped in all the right places. And I have to be sure that the issuing authority will pay up, of course. No sense taking on a job if they renege on payment. That would really tick off my guys.
You're convinced this Imperium of Verk will pay?
Oh, yes.
What makes you so sure?
Well, you're no doubt aware that I take a percentage of every bounty, and the directorate paid me my commission in advance. I figured if they were good for that, they sure as heck were unlikely to try to cheat Lobo.
Sound reasoning.
If the directorate had requested Lobo specifically for the job, they must have been well aware of what the bounty hunter was capable.
Is it usual for you to receive your cut in advance?
First time it's ever happened. But I'll wager they can't be ignorant of what'll happen if they do the dirty on the main man.
There's something about all this that doesn't add up.
It added up for me. I got my 200 grand. I'm sitting pretty.
He flicked off the window monitor and made a show of rummaging among some papers on the desktop.
Now, I hate to be rude, but I have an agency to run, and nobody makes money if the boys aren't working. Sorry if you've wasted your time.
Not at all. You've been very helpful.
While he'd been questioning Quarantino, Superman had put his X-ray vision to good use. He'd surreptitiously looked into the filing cabinets containing the agency records and picked out the copy warrant from Verk. The agent hadn't lied. No crime was listed for John Jones. Superman checked the other bounty warrants in the file. Wanted, Sanhedro. Bounty, 10K. Crime, violent robbery. Wanted, Tonga Gang. Bounty, 25K. Crimes, robbery, murder. Wanted, Reen Zint. Bounty, 50K. Crime, regicide. Every single one had a crime listed for its subject. Only John Jones's warrant was blank. Superman hadn't wasted his time coming here. His intuition hadn't let him down. Something was very wrong. Whatever John Jones had so willingly got himself into, it seemed that he might need the Man of Steel to get him out. Angel Eyes and his compadres watched Superman's departure in silence. Except for the Arcturan, he didn't seem to need to look at anything in order to be able to see it.
Figure this. Lobo goes out on a special reserve job. Total hush-hush. Now Big Blue shows up. Creep's never been here before. What's going on?
The Kund siblings looked at each other, both shrugging at the same time.
Who cares? We'll just get drunk till the next job.
Ask Kanik. He knows.
The Arcturan didn't seem to speak, but all three of them heard his words as clear as crystal. Angel Eyes nodded and beckoned lazily to the bald, sweating barman.
Konik!
Konik finished making up the order he was serving, then came slowly across to the four bounty hunters' table.
More whiskey, guys?
Tell us about Lobo and Big Blue.
For an instant, Konik looked like a man who'd been sentenced to death. Shock and terror raced across his face. He recovered quickly, shaking his head emphatically as he began gathering up empty glasses off the table.
Lobo's out on a job. I don't know why Superman was here. You'd have to ask Mr. Quarantino.
I'm asking you, Konik.
I don't know. I'm just a barman.
Liar.
The word came out of nowhere, but everybody knew it was the Arcturan who spoke. Cabello turned slightly in his chair, and Angel Eyes was amused to note that the barman was starting to tremble. He couldn't be blamed for that. Cabale was the spookiest guy Angel Eyes had ever met. Cabale stretched out one bony, triple-jointed finger. Its tip rested lightly on the back of Connick's wrist, and the barman tore his hand away.
What are you trying to do to me? I...
You will tell us the truth.
There's nothing to tell.
The Arcturan snapped his fingers. One moment, Connick was terrified, desperate to get away from Angel Eyes and his men as quickly as he could. The next moment, he was rooted to the spot, unable to move. He was still terrified, even more so now, because he could feel something start to move. Under his skull, in his brain, like a worm poking around, chewing on his thoughts, burrowing deep into his very essence. Connick tried to scream, but no sound would come. He didn't know how long he stood there, immobile, heart pounding like a drum. Suddenly, his paralysis ceased, but instead of turning and walking away, he found himself talking, and he had no control over what he was saying.
I've been spying on Mr. Quarantino's files. Thought I could make some extra money. A thug called Zemtex paid me $5,000 to let him know who was after him and when he was coming.
Lobo. Pity Zemtex didn't off him. So what's Bo's special job?
Earthling, name a judge. Quarantino got his commission in advance. 1,000,000 credits reward.
A million credits?
Angel Eye's forked serpentine tongue flicked out to lick his lips greedily. Even the Arcturan stiffened slightly.
That's a lot of cash. What'd he do, this Jones?
Crime unknown.
And Big Blue?
Connick couldn't help himself. He knew he shouldn't be saying any of this. That stinking hooded alien had done something to his mind. The words just flowed out of their own account.
It seems he's a friend of Jones. He thinks the warrant is a fake. Maybe he wants to free his pal.
Where's this going down?
A place called Verk. Somewhere in the Magellanic Clouds.
Angel Eyes got slowly to his feet, towering over the barman.
Go back to work. Oh, and Connick, mention this to anybody, and I'll kill you.
Connick snapped back into his normal self, still fully aware of everything he'd said. Feeling drained and violated, he shuffled back toward the bar.
Oh, no.
Glumly, he poured himself a stiff brandy. If Angel Eyes told Quarantino about his betrayal, Connick was out of a job. If he told Lobo, Connick was 180 pounds of dog meat.
All right, let's go. There's 800,000 credits out there with our names on it. Let's go collect.
Lobo's no pushover.
Neither are we.
Angel Eyes jerked his head toward the Arcturan, who seemed to have gotten to his feet without anyone noticing him move.
And don't forget, we have magic on our side.
They didn't get a lot of visitors out in the small Magellanic Cloud, a puff of stars out beyond the rim of the galaxy's spiral arm. If the Milky Way could be said to have an end, this was as close as it got. The distances between star systems were too vast to allow viable commercial ties, and the tourist industry gave the area a complete body swerve. Not a lot of vacationers wanted to look up and see a sky with hardly any stars shining in it. Frightening, creepy, and evil were just some of the phrases used in the last proper tourist survey. What planets there were dull and boring. They were too far away from the rest of existence to be integrated into the ever-expanding galactic culture. They had no features that the cosmic holidaymaker would pay a hefty premium for. And there were no particularly colorful indigenous peoples with gorgeous women and weird druggy ceremonies, which ruled out the sex travel side of the business. The peoples of Orion, which orbited star B-2323, hadn't had a visitor from off-world for 40 years. Orion had reached a state of development roughly equivalent to Earth in the early 20th century. The vast majority of the population lived in cities with skyscrapers 100 stories tall. They'd never invented the internal combustion engine, but had discovered a way to convert low-frequency sound waves into non-polluting motion. Their electricity came free, and maybe that was what had stopped them from progressing any further. Nobody was really motivated to do anything very much, the few integrated attempts at spaceflight had ended in a tidal wave of lethargy and apathy. The cities were autonomous states, but warfare was virtually unknown. Not because the Oriens were especially peace-loving or non-aggressive, but because low-frequency sound waves, when used as a weapon, tended to destroy the user as well as the target. If not checked, they'd end up destroying the planet. So, everyone was nice to everyone else. Life drifted on, as if it were a reasonably pleasant dream. When a fleet of strange crystal spacecraft appeared in their atmosphere, the Oriens were intrigued. Maybe the planet had been put on the galactic tourist trail after all, and these were the first package tours arriving. Whatever, the Oriens were so incredibly lonely, they would certainly make the newcomers welcome. Millions thronged the streets of every city, necks craned to watch the shimmering incoming craft. City dignitaries dusted off their dowdy robes and chains of office and busied themselves with writing welcome speeches. Happy school children waited with garlands of exotic flowers to greet their honored guests. And then, a voice like the crack of doom thundered across the planet.
We are the Alpha. We claim this world. You now belong to us.
Across the planet, there was a wide variety of reaction to the news. In some cities, the crowds panicked. Hundreds of thousands of people milled around in terrified confusion. One city officially declared the whole affair to be a hoax. Its mayor was a serious fan of the hidden camera show so popular around the galaxy, and he was convinced one of the major intergalactic networks had targeted Orion as the next big laugh. He couldn't have been more wrong. Responding to some unseen cue, the descending crystal craft opened fire with their armaments. Cluster bombs dropped indiscriminately in city streets. Cobalt-enhanced phosphor bombs created lethal firestorms. Energy beams ripped into skyscrapers, quickly reducing them to rubble. And plasma bolts took out every civic headquarters. A huge, crystalline humanoid was in the forefront of every attack. The Oriens tried to fight back. 1,000 of their strange, battery-powered aircraft took off in the greatest show of massed force the planet had ever produced. They didn't last an hour. Within a day, every city on the planet was in flames or flattened. Surviving Oriens were stunned when the crystal ships landed and disgorged their Vrkan crews. Tiny, wiry soldiers wearing sunscreen goggles rounded up their newfound enemy and herded them into hurriedly erected execution camps. The Alpha hovered over the planet's largest city. Dense black smoke swirled around it, caressing the crystal being as it drifted up from the burning buildings below. The Alpha felt neither pleasure nor shame as it surveyed the ruined buildings and heaps of corpses in the streets. Their time had come to an end. The cycle of life was broken.
We are the Alpha. Everything else will come to an end.